discipling youth. Boy, I suppose that kinds up a whole bunch of ideas, you know. Maybe that means to make kids theological. Or, yeah, well, they didn't get my first one either. They may not get my second one through this. We'll aim it that way and see. I suppose it's this story has absolutely nothing to do. I can't work it in any way, shape, or form. I'm going to tell it anyhow. There was this little boy named Russell when he was in first grade, the teacher was given an English lesson one day. And she said, now, boys and girls, today we're going to begin to study prose and poetry. And she said, very simply, I just want you to remember one thing today, or actually it's 2 points. One is that prose doesn't rhyme and poetry does. That's the major difference. Even though they may say the same thing, the difference is that poetry rhymes and prose doesn't. So she said, let me give you an example. And she wrote on the board, there wasn't a lady who lived on a hill, and if she hasn't moved away, she lives there still. That's poetry, boys and girls, because it rhymes. See, kill and still, those two words rhyme. So now this would be prose. There wasn't a lady who lived on a hill, and if she hasn't moved away, she probably still lives there. If she had said the same thing as a piece of poetry, but it doesn't rhyme, so this is prose. Now everybody remember that, because tomorrow I'm going to ask somebody to help us out with reviewing today's lesson. So the next day, they come to class, and she says, okay, boys and girls, time for English class again. She said, Russell, would you like to come up here and help us all understand the difference between prose and poetry? So little Russell walks up to the front of the classroom, and he stands next to the teacher's desk, and he takes a deep breath, and he says, there was no lady who lived next to a well, and when she died, she went to, what do you want, prose or poetry? When you're out there in a field somewhere, and I'm doing a workshop, chances are you're going to hear that story again, just pretend like you've never heard it, okay? But to some degree, maybe that's the way we think of discipling youth, is helping them think in theological terms all the time. And it's really difficult. Discipling is a big word today, right? You know, ever since the Great Commission conversation, everybody is talking about discipling. What is discipling, and how do you go about that? And we think of, in terms of, I think most often, of helping kids become, for lack of a better term, well-rounded Christians. Not just that they're always in church, or not just that they're somehow involved in a youth group, but that they're growing in all aspects. And this is a fairly new topic, by the way. It's not something that's been around a long time. I'd like you to think in terms of three areas, and we'll try this, okay? I have no guarantees that this will hold water all the way along the line, but we'll see what happens. Word and sacrament would be one key area that I think you need to think of in terms of discipling. And there are lots of things that come up under that, I think. One would be worship. Another one, obviously, becomes the whole sacramental concern. And another one then becomes studying. We talked about that in this section earlier. Let me ask this question. How many of you were in here for the Bible study one? Okay, most of you. Okay. So we may not spend a lot of time there. That's one area that I think is important. Another area that I think we have to think of in terms of discipling youth is the area of witness. And I hesitate to put down evangelism, and let me explain that quickly. Evangelism, I think, carries a little, for me, carries a little more formal, okay, emphasis on that. Whether it's a Kennedy approach or, you know, some sort of formal approach to bringing the good news of Jesus Christ to the world. For kids, I'd like to keep it a little less formal, and so I use the term witness, although it may conjure up the same thoughts for you, and that's okay, but just so I can explain that to you. And I think that has to be in terms of the old standby catchphrases of word and deed. It has to be... Let me change that, because word may get confusing with something else. Let's talk about it in terms of say and do. How's that? That's an old program out of the history of youth ministry. And the other one that I think is extremely important is stewardship. How do you help kids become good stewards? And the scary thing about it is that most of us in youth ministry don't deal with stewardship for kids. Most of us don't. A lot of parishes, when a kid goes through confirmation, the kid then becomes a giving unit of the congregation and gets a set of envelopes given to them. Mm-hmm.
stewardship they just really don't deal with.
And so I think that's really important, and I may spend a little extra time talking about that.
So let's talk about them just quickly in terms of those three areas with regard to the discipling youth. Word and sacrament, these are probably the three areas that we spend most of our time in with young people. I think most congregations have a good ministry of word and sacrament going. Sometimes they miss kids a little bit, okay? I mentioned earlier, for example, in one of the Bible class sessions, I don't know if I mentioned it in both of them, that I had a pastor one time tell me that after he writes his sermons and he gets them all typed up, last thing he does is he comes down the margin and he writes names of members of his congregation in the margin to see whether or not what he's preaching about that Sunday will hit anybody in particular in his parish. That's a little scary. You might get a Thursday night and have to chuck the whole thing and go at it again, you know. But it's an interesting thought. And one of the thoughts would be, can you write the names of the young people in there? Is worship catching young people, or are you sort of doing it like the fishnet concept? You just toss it out there and hope to catch quite a few with it. And oftentimes we forget about trying to catch youth in worship. Acolyting and ushering and the choirs are big parts of worship services, and maybe we need to do a lot to help people understand the importance of those particular positions within the worship service. But we need to help kids who are participating in that see their importance. We talked about acolyting in the large group this morning. One congregation a few weeks ago said, we don't have acolytes. And somebody said, what? And they said, yeah, well, we have electric candles. And we decided that it wasn't worth the investment of purchasing an olive to have a kid go over and throw a light switch. So we teased about that, you know, kid comes down the aisle and, you know, or out from the sacristy in his white robe and he reverences the altar and then he goes over, you know, and doesn't quite have the same effect. But finding ways to help worship become meaningful to kids is important, and that's through their involvement. And it's important that that happen on Sunday morning, but also it's important that it happen in youth groups, on retreats, on special events. That it not, that worship not just be seen as something that happens only when a guy with a collar and a robe stands in front of a congregation, but that devotion, what we always call devotion, is also worship. That their private meditations at home are also part of their worship life. One thing we did through Holy Week in our parish a couple of years, and we varied the topic, but or varied the approach to it. But we start like on the Monday of Holy Week, and we have an early morning breakfast for the kids, like 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and we have a little worship experience, and then we gave them a little handout, and it had every day through Holy Week, it had a little devotional thought for 10, 2, and 4. So like Dr. Pepper, you know, but at those times of day, or I forget where they were, maybe it was 9 o'clock and noon and 3 o'clock, and then an evening devotion or something like that. But it was a time for those kids to involve themselves in personal worship throughout Holy Week. You know, on Thursday morning, we'd have them breakfast, and then they'd fast all through the day until communion at night, you know, the preparation for that. But something that helps expand the kids' concept of worship beyond just Sunday morning, but helps them see life as worship and their daily lives in that sense. So I think that's an important part of discipling youth, that they see worship beyond Sunday morning and see their life as a life of worship. Sacrament is an important one, and it's there a lot. I think it's helpful if you can convince people in your congregation that it's neat once or twice a year for the kids to have a special opportunity to celebrate the Lord's Supper beyond the time just when the congregation celebrates communion. That's not essential, and there are good points and bad points to that. I sure wouldn't want the kids to get the idea that the only time it's meaningful is when we're all sitting around a campfire and we commune with one another, you know, with the passing of the elements around, or however you might want to do it. But I do think it's important that kids see the sacrament of the Lord's Supper in a special way, and I also think it's important that we help kids get back to their baptism. I don't think we do a very good job of that. I think, you know, it's sort of like this has been done, and, you know, we move on from this point. And we forget to take them back to that from time to time.
And any way that we can help them do that would be helpful. One of the most meaningful events that happened for me was a special class that we did with ninth graders their confirmation experience was to do an Altenberg study on worship. And we took them through the whole worship service as it laid out and studied it right down the line. And it really helped bring these two things into better focus for the kids. And maybe that's not so bad. The study we talked about, important. It's got to be there. It's got to be there as a group. We've got to help kids learn to study the scriptures on their own. There's a neat resource called the Youth Bible Study Notebook. The Youth Bible Study Notebook, written by John and Susan Souter, S-O-U-T-E-R, and it's published by Tyndale. Yeah. It's a bulletin size, okay, 8.5 by 11 folded, and it's for personal Bible study. And it starts out with 5 to 10 minute studies and works its way up to 15 to 20 minute studies. And it gives the kids, it happens in various kinds of thematic kinds of units, gives the kids a list of Bible studies. Right on there, it's got a spot for the date when you did the study, and what passage you're studying in this point off of this list that you've got, and ask you to read it and a couple of questions, and you're out of it. And the 5 to 10 minute ones and the 15 to 20 minute ones are a little longer. But a really neat resource for helping kids get into the scriptures on their own. And one of my suggestions is that if I was back in the parish, I'd encourage the AAL group not to buy the cross or the keychain or the necklace, but to buy one of those booklets for the kids to use post-confirmation experience. Neat piece. Let's move on. Witness. An important thing. You know, kids are being witnesses. No matter what they want to say or do, they're being witnesses to Jesus Christ in some way, shape, or form. And how can we help them do that? There are a couple of pieces of resources that, and you'll get two of them, by the way, that help you explore witnessing. And I'll just hand you this because it's something that the Evangelism Committee puts out. There's one here on the front page talking about child evangelism, and on the inside page, there's one on youth evangelism. And there are some other things in there that you can take and develop to help kids explore witnessing. Now again, you may or may not want to involve them in some sort of formal event. One year after we'd gotten involved in Kennedy evangelism in our parish, and we had several adults who were trained and who could work on it for us, we put together a program called Operation Fishnet. And what it was two Saturday events, about 5 hours, over a lunchtime, in which people from Kennedy came in and helped our kids not learn the Kennedy approach or not learn the outline, but just to explore the importance of all of those parts that Kennedy involves in his outline, to explore how all of those are important when you're witnessing to someone else about Jesus Christ. And our kids walked away from that, not as really trained evangelists or anybody who could necessarily really put it all together, but at least they had explored it. And now as they talk to friends about Jesus Christ, they've got a little better understanding because they've explored it. The saying is important. Kids really shy away from that, much like Moses shied away from that first opportunity. You know, I don't talk too good, Lord. And they really try to balk at that, and I understand that, because I still balk at it. There are times when I'm very uncomfortable having to say Jesus Christ to someone else. It still happens. And it's important that we help kids understand that you can't just do and expect people to really see that that's because of Jesus Christ. Somewhere along the line, you have to bear witness to him verbally. And kids need to see that, and they need to hear that. And they need to feel okay about talking about their faith. And so sometimes, maybe it's within our own group, we get together and we do a little community building. And if we're talking about the community building, one of the questions that I usually like to have kids answer amongst themselves is, in the last 6 months, what's the most significant faith experience you've had? Now that's fairly simple. But what it does is it helps kids start talking to kids about something connected with their faith. pretty non-threatening. You don't have to talk about it a lot, or even talk about it as much as you want. So what's the most significant faith experience you've had in the last 6 months? Or in the last 6 to 8 months, what one thing has helped you grow the most in your relationship with Jesus Christ? Or if you were forced to tell a friend of yours at school something about Jesus Christ in 15 seconds, what would you tell them? Write it down. And see, what happens is that some of them maybe 5 or 10 seconds is max, and others of them find that as they begin to write it down, they can't possibly tell that person anything they'd like to tell them in 15 seconds. And the other thing that it does is it forces them to put it down on paper, and they begin to organize their thoughts. Anything to help kids start talking a little bit about it out inside their own group where it's safe, because what that does is it sort of primes them and gives them a little more courage for the time outside. And witnessing by deed is important. And Terry mentioned the candy stripers, and one thing that I think is really important is that we try to help kids understand that it's okay and that it's desirable that sometimes because of their commitment to other projects that they don't always have time for youth group. It's really interesting. My concept is I want kids in church so I can help them learn to be a positive witness for Jesus Christ in the world. Okay, maybe that's a little simplistic, but that's sort of one of the concepts. And yet when they're out there, involved in football, involved in drama, involved in arts and crafts, involved in bands, being a candy striper, working or whatever it is, and they're out there in the world as Christ people, I get upset because they're not coming to learn how to be Christ people out there in the world. And some kids struggle with that, but there are a lot of kids who are doing a good job, you know, of being a witness to Jesus Christ when they're playing football, when they're in the band, when they're doing drama stuff, when they're out there working. And a lot of kids are being very positive witnesses to that. You know, all of a sudden somebody comes up one day and says, "Hey, want you to meet so-and-so, they're in church on Sunday morning." And I say, "Oh, glad to meet you, Harry. How's it going?" "Fine. Where do you two know each other from?" "I work with Mark." You know, and here Mark has been telling this kid about, you know, his church and about the stuff that happens, and he brings the kid with him that he works with. You know, doesn't happen all the time. I grant you that, but it does happen, and that's neat and exciting. I was in Nebraska this year for the gathering. And was invited back. I've been a part of all the gatherings since 72 in Nebraska, and this is the first one since I've been to St. Louis, and they invited me back to be part of their MC. And that was really exciting to go back and be part of Nebraska again. And there were two gals there from my old parish who were there because kids had been involved in witnessing to them and encouraged them to come to worship and to Sunday school. And finally, those two girls made the commitment to come to weekday school instruction. And they went through the whole thing, and they confirmed their faith in Jesus Christ and have continued all this time like that. And that was so exciting, you know, to see two kids there who come from non-church backgrounds, two kids there who are sisters of Jesus Christ because other kids witnessed it. That's really neat. And not only that, but one of the girls, really sweet gal, just cute as she could be, and just always so caring about other people, and her father was into beating her. And I have to admit, there were times when I wanted to take a baseball bat to that guy. I really have to say there were times when I hated that man because of what he was doing to this kid. And about 2 months ago, I was talking with somebody from back in the parish, and he said, "Guess what?" And he mentioned who it was, and he said, "He's coming to church." And, you know, all these years, she's been coming to church, and she's been inviting him from time to time, and all this kind of stuff. Even though he was beating her, she was still inviting him to church from time to time, and he began to come to church. You know? We're not talking about cutesy stuff. We're talking about, you know, salvation here. And it's kids who are witnessing to Jesus Christ, and it's happening, and we need to encourage it and to help kids find ways to do that on a more regular basis. And two things. One is to help kids see that whatever they do, they are witnessing to Jesus Christ. That's one thing. And secondly, is to provide them with opportunities. Terry mentioned the peer project earlier. And the Peer Project is a project that we put together. We are currently training people to go back to districts to be trainers. Okay, so we're right now training trainers. Those districts will then sponsor workshops where people from congregations will come and they'll learn the peer ministry skills. And they'll go back to their parishes and work with groups of 8 to 12 kids and equipping those kids to be in ministry. For a long time, we've said to kids through Bible study and worship, hey, you need to be caring, loving, concerned people in this world. You need to reach out and touch other people. And that's true. But what we haven't done is really teach them how to do that. And the peer ministry skills are aimed at helping kids learn how to be in ministry to their peers. Not professional counselors, but facing the fact that when another kid is in crisis, be that a large crisis or a small crisis, like, you know, I just need somebody to talk to and I'm really desperate at this point in time, I'm lonely, I got to have somebody to talk to, that the people who are most readily available to them are other kids. Not adults, not parents, not teachers. Peer ministry is geared for helping kids learn how to be those caring, concerned, loving individuals in the world that we keep telling them about. There are 26 districts in that, and that'll be into the parish or into the district this fall for picking up on.
Maybe something on that line, I'm the youth group, but they have youth elders. And each elder is assigned to so many kids in his group, and he takes care of them to see their youth group meetings and activities and things like that. So it's kind of the same way.
Yeah, and whether they're at youth group meetings or not, he's still there and calling them and concerned about them and letting them know that he's here or she's there. Okay. Finally, stewardship. Really important, and it's very difficult because there aren't a lot of good stewardship programs. And so kids, and I'm going to talk about money, kids don't learn to, it is right here, kids don't learn to give a portion of their financial wealth. And kids in America today are financially wealthy. Okay? There's no getting around that. There's, you know, we can talk about it all we want. We can say, boy, you know, money is so tight and it's really difficult. The San Antonio gathering is going to cost somewhere between $150 and $175 per kid. That doesn't include meals, and that does not include extras, and that does not include the bus trip. Okay? That's for maybe one meal, and it's for the housing and the program, and we may not get $10,000, but I'll bet we get at least $7,500. And kids are going to come up with those bucks. So there's money. Those kids have got their hands on money. How many records does the average kid own? How much does their stereo cost? You know, how much money do they spend on gas? What, you know, how many alligators are hanging in the closet? You know, there's money there. And how do we help kids learn to be stewards of that money? And what about their gifts and talents? It's really neat. In our parish, Concordia Kirkwood, we're only during special times of the year do we buy pre-made bulletins now. We print our own. And each week, someone in the congregation is asked to do the design, built off of the theme of the sermon or a lesson or something for that Sunday, and they do a design, and that's printed. And the reason I know about that is my wife is in charge of it, so every week she's on the phone calling. And ever so often, now there aren't a lot of kids who are that gifted, but ever so often, there's a kid in the congregation who's asked to do one of the bulletin covers. That's really neat. You know, last week, one of the kids was an eighth grader who was asked to do the bowl. There are kids with those kinds of gifts and talents. How do we help those kids find meaningful ways to contribute what the Lord has given them, gift-wise and talent-wise, to the ministry of the church? How do we help them become good stewards of that? And we're out of time, almost. However, let me give you this as a resource. Kings as Stewards. I wish that I would have time to order one of these for each one of you. This is, I don't know how you react to this. This is from The Disciples of Christ from the United Church of Christ. It's available from Christian Board of Publications. Christian Board of Publications, Box 179, St. Louis, Missouri, 63166. Now, I've just got my hands on this. I've seen one before, but I've just got my hands on it. So it's been around a while, but I haven't really had a long time to review it. But what I've seen so far, I could easily use this as a resource for developing a good stewardship program for kids. And my guess is, if nothing else is a vicar, if you were to walk into the congregation and into the pastor and say, you know, one thing I'd really like to do with you is see if I can develop some sort of stewardship program for the kids. Would you mind that? You're halfway there to passing your vicarage already, you know. I think that that's one thing that most parishes don't have, that you can make a major contribution to them in. And this would be a good guide for you. 25 cents. Now, so if you want to buy it, this is sort of a guarded statement, but I think that it, as I glance at it, it's pretty close to usable just as it's printed. But if nothing else, you buy one and then you develop your own. And that may be the better way anyhow. There's very little material that I would ever buy and use just as is. Most of it I buy and adjust to my own needs and likes and do that. But this could be really neat. And it helps kids explore money commitment. It helps kids explore lifestyle, food. You know, how do you eat, what kind of clothes are you buying, and where are you spending your money, and where are you spending your time, and all that, and then help them explore how they can also use their vehicle. So I think it's a really neat piece. By the way, this is the second piece that I find that I highly recommend from the United Church of Christ Christian Board of Publication. They also do one on volunteer ministry. It's $20 for a big binder. And it's got a whole bunch of booklets inside of it that helps you explore the ministry of volunteers in your parish. So really neat piece. Really neat piece. The ministry of volunteers from this same organization. Questions? I think we have about 4 minutes. Okay.
Just to get a little bit of an idea of what you came to this one for. Can you tell me questions or concerns that are in your mind that attracted you to a session on worship? And I'll see if I can just design it to answer your question.
I guess there's nowhere to get resources to get more ideas, more variety in youth worship.
Mm-hmm.
How to make worship really relevant to you.
Does it always have to be a full
service? I thought it was how to get involved in the worship, so what areas can I involve in the actual worship, the leading of the worship?
Well, there aren't a lot. This is an interesting question. That he brought it up. The LPA had youth gathering last summer in Purdue, and I was really amazed how they did worship. The philosophy of the Board of Youth Ministry when we hold a youth gathering is that worship should be designed to meet the experience, or to fit the experience. And with that in mind, the worship experiences, while they may follow a traditional liturgical outline from invocation to benediction, the words are never the same. The songs are in many cases written to meet the experience and all that kind of thing. And the LCA at their youth gathering used almost exclusively the LBW. All their communion services came out of the LBW. The liturgies for the closing worship and everything came out of the book. Very institutional. And I thought that was an interesting way to sell a book. They did have the books for sale, by the way, in their bookstore, and they would imprint in gold letters, 1982 LCA youth gathering.
Okay, well, I think I can answer those questions, sort of. And I'm going to begin by telling you what nerves are, what worship takes. It takes both nerves and it takes pride. First of all, when talking about worship for young people, it should be natural. And that means that the students should feel comfortable worshiping that way. I think that teenagers very often think that the hymn book is an unnatural experience. That may simply be because they don't understand what's going on. And I found one of the things that I did in a confirmation class, eighth grade confirmation class, was spent 2 or 3 weeks going through the liturgy and literally giving them a mini liturgics class and explaining to them why we did the things we did. And at least they began to have an understanding of the natural flow of things. And for most of them, Sunday morning began to be a little more of a natural expression. On the other hand, it is nice to take some things that are part of their culture, and rock music is one of them, contemporary language is one of them, and to plug that into worship situations. The answer to this question is no. Folk music does not have to be a part of every youth worship experience. And curiously, I had a person tell me one time they were very frustrated because their youth were given the opportunity to design a worship service. And this particular person was thinking they'll know we are Christians by love, pastor, on hallelujah, and that kind of stuff. And the kids came up with, yes, Jesus loves me, what a friend we have in Jesus, and Rock of Ages quest for me. And this adult was really insulted that they had used that old stuff. So, you know, you kind of have to be careful about your own expectations. But it should be natural. It should be something that they feel comfortable with. It also should be expressive. I think this of course is true of all worship. It should express something. Maybe that's part of the problem with the typical Sunday morning worship in many congregations is that it doesn't express a whole lot. It's by rote. There aren't enough things that are different or enough things that make people feel one way or another, and consequently it doesn't express a whole lot. Not on the hour. What's your watch there for?
Detonation time
would go up. But it, you know, an expressive can take all kinds of forms, but again, it should give the people the opportunity to express themselves and to express their faith. I think one of the interesting experiences, and I'll have to test it out a little bit more, but with the new hymnal, people are finding new ways to express themselves, and their first inclination is to resist it. They're not used to expressing in new words. And new words make you look at what they're saying, and all of a sudden, the liturgy is taking on an entirely new meaning. People are uncomfortable, but I think they're uncomfortable with a good thing. And they're waking up. It's interesting. My secretary doesn't like the new hymnal because it weighs too much. But yeah, and it is heavy. A third thing to keep in mind is worship should be respectful, and I think this is especially true when we're working with young people in designing worship. Especially if they're given the responsibility for a worship setting. And they are to design the worship for a Sunday morning service. And very often, they will be inclined to put things in there simply because they like them, or they're cute, or they sound good, or it will. And this is the bad part. It'll alienate somebody, or it'll make somebody uncomfortable. When I was in high school, that was about the time that folk services became very popular. And not out of a feeling of respect, but rather out of a feeling of confrontation and challenge, we went to the Board of Elders and demanded that there be guitars in the church, and if there were not guitars in the church, then those elders were not Christians. And that certainly had nothing to do with either respect for God, respect for our elders, or respect for worship. It was simply challenge and confrontation. We need to keep those things in mind. Fourthly, it should be voluntary. I don't think effective worship ever happens when people are forced into worship. That opens up a few cans of worms. So when the question is asked, should I make my child go to Sunday school on Sunday morning after they've been to the prom and didn't come in until 5 o'clock in the morning? And chances are they're not going to go voluntarily that day. But worship, to be effective, really, you need to want to do it. It needs to be something that grows out of your own need, your own experience, your own desire to be expressive. And if you are forced to do it, it probably will not be very effective worship. The things that happen in worship can help that to be voluntary. The way you design it, the kinds of things you include in the worship experience. There is a book, by the way, not at all related to worship, but Clyde Naramore wrote a book called Adolescence is Not an Illness, A Guide for Parents. And it would be a good book for anybody who's working in youth ministry, but it answers the question, should I make my kid go to church on Sunday morning? And if you want an answer to that, I refer you to that book. And the last one under nerve is emotional. And here, Lutherans have a little bit of a problem anytime you talk about emotions. And I think there's some sense to that concern, because emotions sometimes carry you away. And you can get all caught up in the emotional aspect and lose the content and lose the theology and all the other stuff. But there is a positive side to the emotional, and I think we can use that effectively in worship. There is something really neat about Easter Sunday morning when the trumpets blast for the first time and you feel a chill up your spine and your emotions say you cried to do it. There's something really to that. We need to keep that in mind and use that. And there's something emotional about Christmas Eve when the moon is falling on the new fallen snow and there's that kind of blue light and you hear the organ mellowly playing away in the manger and the children are singing. And there's something emotional about that, and it tells you something about your faith, and that's your Savior who is born. And you can use those emotions in building worship experiences, and you should keep emotions in mind. Don't carry them overboard to where your whole experience is built on the emotions, but use the emotions in a positive way. After nerve, it also takes pride, and this is pride. You can take pride in the way you worship, or worship is something to take pride in, but it's a growing process, and one of the things that worship takes is patience. It's an educating sort of process where not every kid is going to feel comfortable worshiping the way you want them to worship, or not every adult is going to feel comfortable with the youth service the first time. All kinds of emotions, all kinds of attitudes, all kinds of characters play into the whole worship area, and you're going to be frustrated, you're going to be criticized, you're laying yourself open anytime you try something besides page 5 or 15, and it's going to be that way, or 108 if your church has the LW. Doesn't sound quite as good as 108, does it? But anyway, it does take patience, because effective worship is a process of education. It works, but you have to keep helping people understand what you're doing and the things that you're doing. And the R is the same thing, is again respect. And that's respect for God and all he is and all he does and all he continues to do, and respect for others and their feelings and their emotions. And when you are challenged because of something that happened in the youth service, or when you're challenged because the elders heard that you allowed the bread and wine to be passed around the circle on the youth retreat, remember respect, and don't just write the elder off or the pastor off because he's an old stodgy Lutheran so-and-so who doesn't really understand. Patience and respect. They don't understand, and that's where patience comes in education. I is for illuminating. And what that means is that as one is worshiping, the truths about God and faith that you possess are illuminated. And it should happen that as you're sitting in worship, listening to the sermon or listening to the lessons or singing songs or participating in the litanies or whatever, a light turns on and something about God or something about your faith suddenly becomes important, suddenly takes on new life. You've made a new discovery. You feel good about something that you have learned. The D is devotion, or also devout. A little bit there, that suggests a little bit of seriousness. It suggests an attitude. It suggests also, again, respect. It suggests that we're not doing worship just to be rowdy, although some things that we may do may appear to be rowdy, but that everything has a meaning. Everything has a purpose. And part of the whole, my whole philosophy in worship is that we do need to take Scripture literally sometimes. It's okay to make a joyful noise, and that noise can take all kinds of commotion. When the psalmist says, "Praise the Lord with timbrel and dance," dance to me suggests that all kinds of activity, all kinds of movement and motion. Activity songs are very good and very appropriate for worship. Color is an important thing to use in worship, and use liturgical colors. Use other colors to get a point across. Easter should be white and gold and glitter and sunshine and yellow and orange, and Christmas should be blue and white, and Advent should be blue and purple. Pentecost should be red and the whole blood thing and lively and all of that kind of thing. All of that plays in. You can't begin to worship until you're thinking about all the things that are part of life and a part of experience. And that brings us to the E, which is experiment. That means try new things. And that's true for you, whether you're doing it with youth or doing it with your whole congregation. Maybe they've never done a liturgy or a litany where the congregation reads our response after you say, let us pray for the sick and those who are infirm and those who are sorrowing and those who are, and the congregation responds, "Lord, in your mercy, hear our prayer." We've all done that. But maybe your congregation hasn't. Maybe your congregation has, but try it a different way. You do the Lord have mercy and let them read the other part. Sometimes that's an interesting experience for some people. Experience is another E. And the experience should be varied, a variety of experiences. Yes, variety is important. And enthusiasm. If you yourself are not enthusiastic about worship, I doubt whether you can help anybody else develop that enthusiasm or their excitement for worship. So you need to be enthusiastic about what you are doing, and people will catch on. They will be inspired by your own inspiration. Keeping those things in mind, let's say that you are all, you've been given the responsibility by the Board of Elders or the Worship Committee that you will have a youth service. You will have a youth service by the Board of Elders. Kids don't particularly care, but you will have one. Or it could be that the kids have said, "Victor, why don't we have a youth service?" And you've taken it to the pastor and the Board of Elders, and they said, "Okay." Then where do you go from there? I think one of the first things you do is you sit down with the kids who are really interested in planning it and ask them what kinds of things they want to have happen. Find out why they want to be a part of that. And I guess, you know, if my kids told me that they just really weren't interested and didn't really want to be a part of it at all, I'd really seriously consider going back to the elders and saying that there were some real problems here. Maybe we shouldn't have a youth service at this time. If you see some hope, if you see some growth opportunities, that even though the kids are reluctant to do it, that you feel like that you can help them grow in the experience, then be ready to be frustrated and be ready to be patient, but take them through that. But find out what your kids are, what kind of things they'd like to say to their parents and to their elders about faith. What kinds of things do they want to say about Christ? One line that I use a lot is simply asking the group, just say, "Tell me about Jesus. What do you want to say about him on this particular day?" We recently did a transfiguration service at the church of which my family and I are members, and I worked with the youth group. When the elders said we could have a youth service, we had to find a time when we could do it that would be meaningful. And we checked it all out. Part of the problem was time. We needed enough time to develop it. We also were looking for something that was a little unusual and also that was inspirational. And we wanted to avoid the Lent season because people have a certain image of both youth and Lent, and they didn't seem necessarily to jive that particular time. So we came up with Transfiguration.
I have a question. The youth group at my field church at the present is planning a service for Pentecost. I feel in some things for the worship service that I can help them out, but there are other areas in a service that I don't feel properly trained in, or that I feel that I need more training. At that point, would you suggest that I find someone, let's say if we're dealing with music, find someone who's trained, more trained in music than I am, and have them work with the kids, let's say, in choosing the music? This has been a frustration with me, because I don't feel that I'm properly trained in every area of worship to develop it to its fullest.
Yeah, I think that you need to identify people who could help you do that. If you're not familiar with every music-oriented songbook that there is, find somebody who does have access to that information. And there are, you know, and that's another field work that's very much like Vickery's in terms of continuity. And I really do feel sorry for parishes that throw all the youth work on the field work and expect them to work miracles, especially when you guys always leave for Christmas and Pentecost and spring break and whatever. But when we selected Transfiguration, when you selected Pentecost, the next question that I had for the kids was, what do you know about Transfiguration? And they didn't know anything. And so then what we did was we sat down and we took the three-year lectionary cycle and explored all nine scripture references for that day, and explored what Transfiguration was all about, and what kinds of things went on, what was the experience about, and then the question was, what do you want to say to the congregation about Transfiguration? Now, that's the day that Christ appeared in his heavenly glory on earth. That was the one time people actually saw him, like he appeared in heaven, and that's what they wanted to get across to the people. And then the question was, how do you go about that? So, first of all, find out what your day is about, the day that your service is. Then explore that. Then ask the kids what they want to tell the congregation, what they want to share with the congregation. And then fourthly, find out how you can do that. And these kids came up, and it was the kids who worked it out. I did not program. It was they who said, we think we could do this, or we'd like to see this. They thought there could be lots of color. Jesus appeared in ultra-white garments. White is all colors put together. You put all colors together in the prism and you get white. So they thought they would break the white down and they would put colors all over the place. And they had streamers and they had flags and they wore tunics and they blew up balloons. And that was an important part. And they gave away colored flowers at the end of the service. I also think this is the last point, but give worshipers something, especially when you're doing a youth service, give them a souvenir. The thing Oral Roberts and Robert Schuller and all those other TV evangelists do is give souvenirs. And people remember the souvenir. They remember the worship event. And people all over Brentwood, Missouri are looking at the paper flower and they think, Transfiguration Center, the kids did that.
Are you the one that told us about the data that the year at Maplewood when we were doing the service? Somebody told us about a service where they was about the guy that had a year cut off in the garden. And they actually passed out little cookies that were a heart cut in half, you know?
Well, I did it at Christmas service when the theme was angels, and we gave everybody an angel one and cut a bread. But it's very meaningful, and people remember. Those are worship tools. Maybe a little unusual. Worship tools. Another thing, as much as possible, let the kids write part of the sermon or service, and some things open up more than others. I like to have the confession of faith written by who. If I'm designing the worship, I'll write the confession of faith myself. For this particular Transfiguration Sunday, we wrote the confession of faith, and basically what that is an analysis of what happened on Transfiguration Sunday as you look at the Apostles' Creed, and you sort of follow the Apostles' Creed outline with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then you say instead, how did the Father, and this particular thing, how did the Father show up, or what was his role at the Transfiguration? And the kids looked at the lessons, and they looked what they had learned, and they came up with a statement. And then you look at Jesus. What happened to him on Transfiguration? What did you believe about him? What did you learn about him? What did it tell you about him? And we didn't get any of the conceived by the Holy Ghost, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, but we got things about him being alive, about him, about his heavenly glory, about his awesomeness, his majesty, and those kinds of things. And that was what we confessed we believed on Transfiguration Sunday. The same thing with the third article in the Apostles' Creed, and especially that the Christian Church and about how we would seek him in heaven and glory on the last day. The songs or litanies are things that kids can write, and your job would be to be a facilitator, to sit down with them and to walk them through it and ask them, you know, what kinds of things do we need to pray for this Sunday? Who do we need to pray for? And what do we want to pray about in light of what we've shared in the sermon and what we've done in the other things, the other parts of worship? What do we want to say and how do we want to say it? What can we pray about? My watch is 2 minutes and we've just covered 6 hours, and that can be very frustrating. But this question here, resources, there really aren't any. And that is a blunt answer. There are some old things. There's a book that Norman Hobble wrote, which you may feel guilty about buying. He was a professor here before 74. But it's called Interrobang, and there's some neat litany type things in it. There are a couple of old books from the 60s that have some things you can adapt from. One was Are You Built from Jeremiah. But there's just really not a whole lot available on youth worship. Maybe that's good, because then when youth worship happens, it becomes the product of the youth who are putting it together. They own it. They're the presenters. They feel good about what they're saying. We do have a resource book from the last youth gathering that we have some copies of at the office, and if you want a sample, just give us a call and we'll send it to you. It's called Rejoicing in the Presence, and it includes the worship and Bible study and some other material that we used at the 1980 youth gathering. Again, those are things that you can use, but it's better to adapt into your situation. And that's true of any kind of resource for any ministry that you may be involved in. I'd be very careful about taking anything and using it straight out of a book. You know, always be sure you've read it, and always be sure you've analyzed it, and always be sure you've adapted it to a specific situation.
And Terry, what did you do when you had a youth service as far as the main message? Oftentimes elders are going to say, well, one of your pastors say something. Did you say something? Did you give any type of mini service?
That has worked a couple of ways. When I was on Vicarage, I think when we did youth services, I always ended up giving a sermon, and that was part of the congregation's expectation. When we did this service over, we got a Mount Calvary in Brentwood, and when we did it over there, Phil Pecorni, Dan Pecorni's son, gave the sermon, and did a super job. He told the story of Transfiguration, and just did a really fine job, and he sat down and he studied it and analyzed and put it together, and people were really impressed. Now, part of the reason he could give the sermon is because Mount Calvary is open to doing that, and there are a lot of churches where if the pastor doesn't preach, then you haven't heard the sermon, and that may even be true of the vicar. You know, you may preach some Sunday and people, you know, they're very friendly and kind, but the pastor didn't preach, so it's not quite the same thing. It's okay, but it's not quite the same. So it kind of depends on where you are, and also if you're in a kids who are able to do that. If you find a kid, though, and he or she has the ability, see if you can work it out where they can do it, or do it as a group. Drama, chancel drama, sometimes is a good alternative.
I ask you, what do you think about this? Some pastors I know will work with the youth in planning a service, but the pastor will write the sermon, but he wants a young man from the congregation to give it. Now, I know one difficulty is that it isn't his own, but sometimes it's his own words. I mean, but outside that, how do you feel about that?
I guess I would wonder why the pastor felt it necessary to do that. I can understand where the pastor might want to see the sermon that a kid prepared before he gave it. And I think that's legitimate. I think that if you would have a teenager write the sermon, you'd want to review it and offer it to the pastor for review. I have done that a couple of times. But I'm not sure the other way around whether you could even find a kid who'd be willing to give it. I guess I'd have to be honest with the pastor and ask, you know, why.
I guess it would be another way of just getting another youth
participating in youth service.
If the pastor and the youth could sit down and work it out together, where both own the finished product, I'd feel better about that. Was there another hand?
I'm
going to
give
them another time. Everybody else is going longer, isn't it? By the way, songbook wise, I'm going to put a list of songs on the blackboard in the other room when we do the resources. Because that is one question that gets asked a lot, is what kind of songbooks are available. And that's also one of the things we get asked to produce a lot. When is the Voice of Youth Services going to come out with their own songbook? Every song you ever wanted to sing. You don't know how frustrating that is. As soon as you get a songbook published, it's dated because there's so many new songs being written. How to involve youth? That's the same as how to involve adults. That you ask them to be involved and give them the opportunity to plan and design worship. Nobody's wondering in the hall if I'll answer your question.
Okay. I don't think you really dealt with it yet, and that's not how you get youth involved in their service, or youth service, or any of that, but how do you introduce the youth in a regular Sunday morning institutional services that are the normal service that you give, instead of having everybody sit out there, you know? How do you get them involved in the worship?
In an upfront role?
Yeah.
First question is, is it necessary? Second question is, do you have adults in those upfront roles? And the third question is, well, exactly the first question is, why do you want to use in those roles? And then, see, that answers the question that precludes the question. I mean, what you're asking, should people other than the pastor have a role in worship? And there the answer is yes. And so the question is not so much as how do you involve youth in those roles, as how do you involve the lay people in the congregation in those roles. Then you have to talk about how do you overcome the whole attitude that the only person who can do it is the pastor, and all of those kind of things.